Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. I hope you are all keeping well on this Monday morning. It's the 26th of February and it's 11 o'clock. So on today's show, we're going to talk about a few health-related subjects that hopefully you can take away some tips and some hints from that maybe you can apply in your own life and improve your own health. So we're going to be talking about diet drinks and how they are a big contributor to weight gain and obesity, and also how they are a big contributor to type 2 diabetes. We're also going to talk about ways to help your child from becoming obese with some really simple tips. If you're a parent and you have young children, there'll be some tips there that maybe you can put into practice that long-term can benefit the health of your children. And also have on my show this morning, Jill Monk from All Health Matters. Hi, Jill.
Good morning, Neil.
It's good to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you.
And in about 15 minutes, we're going to talk more about what Jill does and also what All Health Matters offers. So that'll be around 11:15. As usual, you can tweet into the show if you'd like a shout out, or you'd just like to say hello, or you'd like me to announce an event. If you go to Twitter and you use the Twitter handle at Health Radio Show, you can find the show's Twitter feed there. Drop me a tweet, say hi, and I'll give you a shout out. You can also find the show's Facebook page if you search Health Matters Radio Show. And as usual, if you'd like to contact me direct, you can contact me through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So the purpose of the Health Matters Radio Show is to provide competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate, inform and enlighten you in ways you might improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I am not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for medical advice. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your pharmacist first. All content is provided for general information only and is based on my knowledge, my experience, my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from use of or application of the content of the show. Okay, so now we have the small print out of the way. Let's have a chat about obesity. Okay, we know in this country we have an obesity crisis, and we can look around and we can see, in adults, it's estimated that around 30% or just under 30% of adults in the UK are obese. That's not just overweight; that's actually obese. But what's really, really scary is that a third of children aged between 2 to 15 are either overweight or obese. So if you're looking at preschool children, say, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, and so on, it's really important as a parent that you understand ways that you can help your child to not become one of these statistics. So there's a lot of preschool education that you can give to your child and you can put into place in the home that may actually help your child to reduce the risk of becoming overweight as they go through their school years. So in the UK, it's estimated that around 4 million children were classified as being too fat. And one of the real big dangers of this is if they're overweight as a child, they generally will continue to be overweight as they go through adolescence and into adulthood. And then that has massive health implications as they get older and they become an adult. So if you carry too much weight, you increase the risk of type 2 diabetes, which obviously we know we have an epidemic of type 2 diabetes, not just in this country, but in the Western world in general. And also there are other physical health conditions like heart disease, which can be linked to obesity. And also there are statistics that suggest that those that are overweight are more likely to be living with conditions like depression. So when you look at how much we spend on treating obesity and diabetes in this country, we actually spend more on treating those two conditions alone than we do on the police, the fire service and the judicial system combined, which is quite frightening. And those figures were from NHS England in 2014, 2015, and we spent around £5.1 billion dealing with overweight and obesity-related health issues. And the government, to give them credit, they are putting things in place. So they are they plan to introduce the soft drinks levy. They're trying to get food manufacturers to take sugar out of their products, or a percentage of the sugar out of their products. They are supporting innovation to help businesses to make their products healthier. They are openly making healthier options available in the public sector. They're trying to make school food healthier. And they're also bringing into action improved food, improved and clearer food labelling. So the government are doing their thing to try to combat this obesity crisis that we are facing at the moment. But if you're a parent, you shouldn't just depend on the government to do their thing. You can take control and you can help your child, particularly if they're preschool, so between 2 and 5, if they're of preschool years. You can put into place now things that will probably last them well into their adulthood. So the first thing is, and I've got 7 points here just to briefly go through with you. The first thing is to breastfeed your child if possible. Now obviously, if they're 5 years old, that's probably too late. But if you've got a young baby, it's been proven that breastfeeding is the best form of nutrition for infants. The Department of Health recommends exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life, as it does provide all the nutrients a baby needs. And it has been proven that breastfeeding does reduce the risk of obesity in later childhood. And every month of breastfeeding is linked to a 4% decreased risk in getting obesity as they get older. I found that statistic quite interesting. So number two, eat a balanced and healthy diet. Well, this one sounds quite obvious. Balanced, healthy and varied. So children do need regular meals and they need healthy snacks on a regular basis. But soft drinks, fizzy drinks are not really the way to go. So when you consider that one can of a soft drink, and I shall not name brands, but you can check the food labels out for yourself. If you look at a soft drink can, that can contain as much as 8 teaspoons of sugar in one can. And that one can take that child over their daily recommended sugar intake for the entire day, which is quite frightening, really. So if your child is drinking, you know, 2-3 cans of soft drink, you might want to consider helping your child to perhaps switch to semi-skim milk, as an example, or perhaps even water would be a better choice. But try to stay away from these soft, fizzy drinks. Keep your children active. Number three, it's been proven that children in the UK now are less physically fit than they were in the past. Part of that is due to the gaming generation, and lots of children spend time in their bedrooms playing computer games or just on the computer generally. And the recommendation is that children under 5 years old should be active for at least 3 hours spread across an entire day. So the way to do that is ask your child what they like to do, what activities that they enjoy, and then you can encourage them and participate with them in following their interests and making the activity fun. Number four, offer smaller portions at first. So children, or particularly babies or young children, are very good at regulating their own appetite. It's only as they get a bit older that they realise that they can eat more than their body actually needs. So a tip here is to offer smaller portions at first. Don't fill up a huge plate and make the child eat it, because a child will generally know when they need to stop eating. So offer smaller portions at first, and then if they've eaten what's on the plate, it's okay to give them a second helping, but remember that second helping should still be nutritionally balanced, so vegetables or salad or fruit. And you can also encourage your child to eat slowly. I mean, this is actually good advice for adults as well. And I see lots of adults just wolf their food down. But eat slowly, chew their food properly. And it's recommended that you should chew each mouthful between 15 and 20 times. And also pause between mouthfuls and enjoy the food that you're eating. And here's another interesting tip for children and adults alike as well, is when you first start to eat food, you'll notice that it tastes great. The flavours pop and the food tastes fantastic. As you continue eating that meal, the flavour will generally decrease And that's your brain's way of telling you, before you get the physical signs of being full up, that's your brain's way of telling you that you need to stop eating. So if you become in tune with that, and you start to recognise that when the flavour starts to decrease in the food that you're eating, it's a good way to prevent yourself overeating. Number five, take into account your family history. There are links that suggest that if parents are overweight, that the children will be overweight as well. So when both parents are obese, around 20% of the children will be obese. And if one parent is obese, around 10% of children will be obese. So you do take that into account. As a parent, please take the initiative and think about family meal times, and obviously think about the health of your children. And that might involve the children in some cooking activities, perhaps, or maybe changing the way that you eat or the portion size that you serve. Number six, ensure that your child is getting plenty of sleep. So this is another risk factor for adults as well, but particularly for young children. So if children are sleeping less than 10 hours a night, that can increase the risk of obesity as they get older. And it is recommended for children aged between 1 and 3 that they should get between 11 and 12 hours per night. So if they're not getting that, that could be linked to the food they're eating. It could be linked to their pre-bedtime activity. So maybe try turning the TV off and look to improve their bedtime routine by maybe reading a book with them or playing the game with them as a family before they go to bed. And lastly, number seven, try not to fry your food. When you fry your food, you add lots of extra calories, as well as often saturated fat. So try and grill, boil, or bake your food. So there's seven tips there that hopefully you find useful as a parent. And there's certainly some tips in there that adults can take away as well to help them. So on this morning's show, I'm going to be taking you back to 1980. It's a year that I remember well. We've got a few tracks from 1980 that I'm going to play for you this morning. And the first of those is a classic by the late, great John Lennon.
To jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Welcome back to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. I hope you are all keeping well this morning. If you'd like to tweet in, the show's Twitter handle is at Health Radio Show, and you can use the hashtag, hashtag Health Matters Radio Show. You can also find the show on Facebook if you search Health Matters Radio Show. I have a couple of shout-outs this morning. I have a shout-out for a tweet that's come in from a Better Medway. So they've written in and said, it would be great if you could mention that they've got a free NHS health check available to Medway residents aged between 40 and 74 from their smoke-free advice centre in Railway Street in Chatham. So that's NHS health checks for those in the Medway area who are aged between 40 and 74. Pop into their centre in Chatham, in Railway Street in Chatham, to have a health check and an MOT. And if you text check, so CHECK, check to 81066, they will send you more information. I'd like to give my usual shout out to the One You Shop in Ashford. If you have any health issues or you'd like a free health MOT check in the Ashford area, you can pop into the One You Shop between 9:30 and 4 Tuesday to Friday and 9:30 to 1 on a Saturday. And the One You Shop is located near the Tank in Park Mall. And also a shout out to a friend of mine, Ania Jeffries. Ania Jeffries has an event coming up, the Women at Work event in, let me just check when it is, it doesn't say. But Ania's Twitter feed is at Jeffries Ania. If you contact Ania on that Twitter feed, or you go to www.womenworkevents.com, you can find out more about the events that she is running in the West Kent area. Okay, so we come on to my guest interview now. I'm pleased to say that we have Jill Monk on the show this morning. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Neil.
And Jill is from All Health Matters. So we're going to find out more about what All Health Matters offer and how as an employer in particular, but also as an individual, how they may be able to be of help to you. So I know we want to talk more about the business, Jill, and how the business started and what the business offers. But can you give me just a brief background as to how you got to where you are now?
Well, I certainly don't want to bore your listeners, Neil, because I can talk for England, as most people who know me will tell you. Some years ago when I worked for an occupational health company, which got later sold out, my husband and I performed a life laundry. We threw everything up in the air. We sold everything. We went off to New Zealand for a few weeks and came back and said, what am I going to do now? And a couple of years later, I decided to start my own occupational health company. And that's how it came to be. I'm not a qualified medical professional. I have to just say that straight off. I did train as a nurse many, many moons ago when dinosaurs walked the earth. But as you can see, I'm no spring chicken, and I've been in business now for 40 odd years. So All Health Matters came about, born in my garden shed just 8 years ago this month. Mm-hmm. And it, from there, it's grown and grown and grown. And I buy in the skills that we need from medical professionals.
Fantastic. So going on to the business itself, All Health Matters, what does All Health Matters do? What services do they offer?
Well, our core service is occupational health or occupational medicine, which isn't anything to do with the National Health Service or GPs. It's about the health of the working population. So occupational health is a medical discipline which concentrates on the effects of work on health and health on work. Mm-hmm. We also offer, as a sideline to the occupational health offering, we do offer a private medical services as well, so that we can approach our own specialism in a more holistic way. And we can also support the families of people that come through us via the occupational health route. We can also support their families privately.
Excellent. And obviously health in the workplace at the moment is very much a hot topic, isn't it?
Certainly is.
I had the privilege of going to the Wellbeing Symposium last mm-hmm. week, and there are various speakers on there talking about health in the workplace, and not just physical health, but obviously mental health
yes.
as well. So what obligations do employers have as to the well-being, not just of the physical health of their staff, but also the mental health?
Well, there are two very definite sides to occupational health. One is driven by legislation, in that we work closely with health and safety, which may be a dirty word in some books, but believe me, taken at its genuine, the Health and Safety at Work Act is actually a very good one. Mm-hmm. And had we had a lot of the interventions that we've got now, had we had them decades ago, we wouldn't have asbestosis, we wouldn't have miners' lung, you wouldn't have people totally debilitated through vibration white finger, because the surveillance would have been in all those years ago. So as society, we learn from mistakes that are made, and regulation is brought in to stop those mistakes being growing and getting even into a worse situation, such as asbestosis. So from occupational health, our offering is to make sure that the people that go to work, if there are work-related health risks, that we are in there with the employer to make sure that their work doesn't make them ill. Or if indeed someone already has a health condition, that they can go to work, providing they're suitably supported. They shouldn't, just because they have a health condition, be left on a scrap heap. They should be able to work. And that can be a mental health problem, it can be a physical disability. That's what occupational health is all about, keeping people at work, keeping them well.
Keeping them happy, absolutely.
Because healthy business needs healthy people.
And more, I think more and more businesses these days are switching on to the fact that health in the workplace is an investment. I think we went through a long period yes. of time where I think they saw it as a cost, mm-hmm. and I think some still see it as a cost, unfortunately.
Sadly, yes, you are right. But I always say, one of my mantras is that the greatest asset that your company can have is its workforce.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't matter how good the widget is that you make. It doesn't matter how many you make. But if you haven't got people to make them, to sell them, to package them, to distribute them, to collect the money, to invoice them, then what's
then
the point in making the widget?
Absolutely.
So the key people in your business, the most important people in any business are the staff themselves, even before your clients.
Definitely, definitely. And obviously, in terms of that investment, that can filter down to things like, you know, reduced sickness absence, can't it?
Indeed. As I say, a healthy business needs healthy people.
Yeah.
If you treat your staff well, then and you put in place early interventions, if you do see someone is falling down a slippery slope somewhere, certainly mentally, if you step in very quickly and give them support rather than admonish them, then you are likely to garner a great loyalty from that employee, which means that you're not going to have to replace them, which means your recruitment costs aren't so high, your training mm-hmm. costs aren't
exactly.
so high.
Exactly.
And another little saying I say, you know, a cart with four wheels goes in the same direction at good speed. One of those wheels falls off. It might still move, but it's not going at any speed and it's going all over the place. And the three wheels that are left are under a great deal of strain. You liken that to your business.
Wise words. Fantastic. Okay, so obviously employers, if they've got health issues with their staff, or staff with health issues, I should say, they obviously have the option of referring that member of staff to their GP, to their doctor. Why would an employer necessarily get you on board to help their staff rather than just referring that member of staff to their GP?
Good question. Well, GPs, as we all know, are very, very busy people. The NHS is under a great deal of strain, we know that. GPs have 8 minutes or so with every patient, and they're dealing with everybody from the cradle to the grave, from newborns right to geriatrics. They can't possibly be expected to specialise in occupational medicine as well. So occupational health medical professionals are all trained doctors and nurses, and they have moved to specialise in in the world of occupational medicine by learning about the effects of work on health. So, for instance, they learn about the COSH regulations. That's the control of substances hazardous to health, which can be fumes, it can be dust, it could be someone working in a flour factory. Now, a GP can't possibly be expected to monitor the health of people through their careers. They are reactive. So you go to your GP when something is wrong. The whole idea of occupational health is that it's first and foremost preventable, preventative.
Okay.
So it's a proactive rather than a reactive service.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Does that answer the question?
It does, it does. The Health and Safety at Work Act, and I'm sure most employers are aware of that act, but what are the main messages of the Health and Safety at Work Act?
Well, the parts that we're concerned with are obviously the health parts. Now, the Health and Safety Executive have got the safety side of work pretty well tied up with hard hats and yellow lines on the around factory floors and high-vis jackets and that sort of thing. But when it comes to the health side of health and safety legislation, as I said a little earlier, there are lots of hazards in the workplace. So if you've got a chap using a gang hammer digging holes in a road, there is a risk there to his health, perhaps in noise, perhaps in vibration. So the Act says that as an employer, you have a legal obligation to reduce risk or eliminate it altogether. Now, in life, you cannot eliminate all risk because then we'd never get out of bed in the morning, would we? Or at least you'd then get bed sores, so that's not actually reducing risk. So employers are expected to reduce risk as far as they possibly can and to put in control measures. So that might mean hearing protection. It might mean breathing masks and to stop them inhaling dusts or particles from the air. But how do you know if those control measures are working unless you have a surveillance program to check? And that's where occupational health comes in. So the Health and Safety at Work Act drives employers to understand the health hazards of particular jobs. And people like us, and there's a lot of occupational health companies out there, sit underneath that hierarchy in order to make sure that all those control measures are working.
Ah, excellent. So occupational health is about prevention and early detection.
That's first and foremost our job. Occupational health definitely falls into two fields here. One's proactive, and that is that sort of thing, the health surveillance, the getting in there, checking every lungs every 3 years or so to make sure there hasn't been any deterioration in health, but also a reactive where we assist employers with, as you said earlier, someone who perhaps has sickness, absence, difficulties. Perhaps they are undergoing surgery or expected to have surgery. And the employer needs to know, can that person, having had that surgery, can he still drive a forklift truck? Or can he still work that? Can he still fly the aeroplane or drive that train or drive a bus? So they bring in occupational health to assess the fitness of that person. And we might say, well, no, he shouldn't really be driving a train. However, he's fit enough to work in the office. So can you find him another job? He could do this particular, and I'm saying he, excuse me, ladies, but you know, is there something else that he can do that you can accommodate to keep him at work? Because work is good for you. And there's no good at all sitting at home.
Indeed, indeed. So just elaborating a bit on the occupational health side of the business, and we will discuss the other bits of the business in a moment. But are there any examples of how the occupational health side of the business has helped companies? Do you have any case studies that you can, obviously, you can't name names, but are there any general case studies that you can talk about?
Yes, there are a few, but as I said, I don't want to bore your listeners. I'll be here all day. But there is one that will always stay with me, and that is an employer who contacted us because of an employee, a mature gentleman, if I may put it like that, valued employee, who seemed to be unable to drive a company vehicle without having an accident. and the company couldn't understand why he had been worked there for so many years accident free, and then in the case of a couple of years, it seemed that he was constantly having vehicle accidents, as a consequence of which the insurance company told the company that they would no longer insure this employee.
Okay. Well,
of course, that has a knock-on effect. The company did all that they could to try and understand why, including sending him off on advanced driving courses, but it didn't solve the problem. So in the end, he contacted us and said, could you look at him from a health perspective to see if there's something going on? And indeed, we saw him, and indeed a consultation with our doctors, and it all came out in that this man had a very serious health condition that mm-hmm. had been diagnosed 2 years before. That was affecting his spatial awareness and affecting his balance. But he had been frightened to tell anybody about that through because he feared that he would lose his job and therefore his livelihood.
Yeah.
He hadn't even told his wife that he had been so diagnosed, and he kept his medicines hidden in the garage in a tin. But this all came out through the occupational health consultation. And with working with his employer and with him, it all ended very, very happily, because he wrote a lovely letter to say that due to the intervention, his medicines were now in the bathroom. His mm-hmm. wife knew all about it. And his employer had accommodated this illness by giving him a younger member of staff who was training to drive,
yep.
using the maturer man to teach the young one the skills of the job. And I think that is a wonderful story, and it just shows you how the intervention of Oc Health can help a company, and it helped the employee
yep.
to get over the stigma of that illness that he had.
Brilliant. That is a really heartwarming story.
Mm.
And it just goes to show the value in what you do. So we've covered occupational health. I'm aware on your website, people can go to www.allhealthmatters.co.uk. There's a number of other services that I think we should just briefly cover, just to make people aware of some of the other things that you can offer. So in addition to occupational health, what other services does All Health Matters provide?
We offer a series of other private medical services. And this came about because as a company, it often became very apparent when an employee was referred to one of our doctors that there was something else going on in their lives, that perhaps from a stress point of view, there was a member of their family or financial difficulties or whatever. So we decided to put in a holistic approach to occupational health, registered with CQC, which is very unusual for an occupational health company, which falls outside the scope of the Care Quality Commission.
Yeah.
So we registered with CQC to be able to not just offer occupational health through our core offering, but also to be able to support the families of people that came to us and members of the public. So those services encompass things like travel medicine. Fewer and fewer GPs these days are offering travel vaccinations. And if you're travelling into malaria endemic areas or yellow fever areas, you really do need to make sure that you are properly protected. And so we offer that to members of the public in all of our four clinics. We also have a visiting partner, a medical partner called the Gooden Medical Group, mm-hmm. who come in twice every month.
Okay.
Who use laser treatment to treat varicose veins, which if anybody's got those, they know they're not just unsightly, they can be very painful. And if mm-hmm. people are on their feet all day, they often get varicose veins. So the Gooden Medical Group use our premises to perform those procedures. Counselling and psychological services, again, we've got our own team of psychology services, our counsellors, with our own therapy room, and we can fast track employees of our clients, all their families, through the counselling services. Very private, very discreet, and you're not having to wait long a long time, which you could potentially do on the poor old NHS. Sexual health clinics, if we very discreet there, I won't talk too much about that, but if anybody had a sexual health problem and perhaps they don't want to go to their GP because they happen, the woman that works behind the counter at their GP is their next door neighbour.
Of course.
Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily want to do that. So you can come to us quite privately, quite discreetly, and we will help out there. As indeed with any medical advice. What we can't do, we don't have X-ray machines, we don't have mammography kit, but what we can do is we can refer into private hospitals who do have that sort of equipment if it was deemed to be appropriate.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So all your services can be found, as I mentioned, on your website, which is www.allhealthmatters.co.uk. What other ways can people contact you, Jill?
Our main telephone number is a Canterbury number, which is 01227 451 233. That's 01227 451 233. All of our clinics are connected via telephone, but by ringing that you can book an appointment at any of our clinics. Although I have to say the vein clinic is only carried on both at Bexhill and in Canterbury. That isn't done at either of the London clinics yet.
Okay.
But certainly all the other services. Our email address, admin@allhealthmatters.co.uk, goes into a box which is constantly monitored. Or there is a fill in the form on the website, which you've just read out, www.allhealthmatters.co.uk.
Fantastic. And you can also contact All Health Matters on Twitter, which is @AllHealthMatt, M-A-T-T. And also, if you prefer to use Facebook, if you search All Health Matters LTD, you can find the company's Facebook page.
Indeed.
It's been great to have you on the show this morning. Thank you, Jill. It's been really interesting to find out more about what you do. And just to remind you again, Jill's website address is www.allhealthmatters.co.uk. And thank you once again for coming in and explaining more about what you do.
Thank you very much indeed for the invitation.
Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we crack on with the show and talk about diet drinks, obesity and diabetes, one more song from 1980. And it's a classic I haven't heard for a long, long time. And hopefully on this Monday morning, it should get you moving around the office and get your heart rate up and your blood pumping. It's Odyssey, and use it up and wear it out.
Gonna use it up, gonna wear it out. There ain't nothing left in this whole world I care about. I said, one, two. Interested in collaborating with like-minded Kent businesses? Join our supplymybusiness.co.uk community today and start growing your Kent business network for just £20 a month.
Welcome back to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. And my special guest on this morning is Jill Monk from All Health Matters. And Jill's still with me, which is great. And just to remind you, Jill's website is www.allhealthmatters.co.uk. You can tweet the show. If you go to Twitter and go to at Health Radio Show, you can find the show's Twitter feed there and you can tweet in for a shout out either on today's show or on next Monday's show. And you can find the show Facebook page if you search Health Matters Radio Show. And as normal, you can contact me personally via email. If you go to my website, www.i-nutrition.co.uk, you can drop me a line there. So for the next 10 minutes or so, I'm just going to have a chat to you about the subject of diet drinks. So we're kind of brainwashed because we have this obesity crisis that we discussed earlier in the show. We are kind of brainwashed by the food industry that low-fat foods are good for us and eating less fatty foods is good for us. And it's all about the calories and it's all about willpower and it's all about moving more and eating less. And unfortunately, if it was that simple, we really wouldn't have the obesity crisis that we have in this country today. And it's quite interesting that a lot of these things that we're told are being told to us by the people that are trying to sell us the stuff in the first place. And I would argue that some of that is food industry propaganda that have made us, over the last 30, 40 years, a heavier nation on the whole. So, as I mentioned earlier in the show, around 30% of people in the UK are obese. So we're very much catching up with America. I think America, at the last count, was about 35 or 40%, not just overweight, but obese. And we are told to make better choices. We're told to take more personal responsibility. And we are told to drink, or we're told, or we are educated that diet drinks are a healthier option. But there's some studies out recently that have suggested that diet drinks, so drinks with artificial sweeteners, so zero calories, generally zero calories, but with artificial sweeteners rather than sugar. There's been research recently that have suggested that these diet drinks can actually make you fat, and they can contribute to type 2 diabetes and heart disease and stroke. And also there's suggestion of certain types of cancer as well. So how do diet drinks make us fat? Well, if losing weight was all about calories, then you'd argue that diet drinks or zero-calorie drinks or these drinks with artificial sweeteners would be a good idea. And unfortunately, the food companies and the drinks companies, that's what they want us to believe. And many of them are actually proudly promoting the fact now that they have reduced their sugar in a lot of their products, which, you know, to a degree is a good thing, but they are heavily promoting these no-calorie drinks or these drinks with artificial sweeteners as a healthier choice. Now, there's been a few studies out on this recently. There was a 14-year study of 66,000 women that have suggested that actually consumption of these diet drinks leads to weight gain. And in many cases leads to, and this is more worrying actually, an increase in type 2 diabetes. There was a research paper issued by the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. They studied 2,800 adults and they found that those that consumed at least 200 ml servings of soft drinks a day were 2.4 times more likely to suffer from type 2 diabetes, and they found that those that were drinking around a litre of these diet drinks, they saw an increase of tenfold as the risk of contracting type 2 diabetes as they were getting older. And it's interesting that most people that drink diet drinks drink more of them than perhaps they would drink the sugary version, because they think it's healthier, because they think they're not consuming sugar and they're not consuming calories, therefore it must be good for them. So there's many people out there that are drinking these diet drinks that aren't just drinking one can. They are drinking three, four, five cans a day. And as the study in Sweden suggests, those that were drinking a litre, so about three cans, saw a tenfold risk in the chance of developing type 2 diabetes. There was another study in Israel, and this is actually closer to home for me because I'm very much into the study of gut bacteria. And they found that these artificial sweeteners were actually altering the microbiome. So the microbiome is essentially your digestive tract, predominantly the large intestine, where all your tens of trillions and hundreds of trillions of bacteria live. And it was actually altering the diversity in the microbiome, in the digestive tract. And that was causing blood sugar levels, blood glucose levels, to actually rise higher than if the person had consumed sugar. And it was keeping the blood sugar levels up higher for longer. So I found that study quite interesting, actually, because, yes, you know, an excess of sugar is definitely not good for you. But it's actually suggesting that these sweetened diet sodas, these diet sodas with aspartame and saccharin and sucralose and other artificial sweeteners are having a big impact on our health. And people are switching from these, as I say, because they think it's healthy and there's no sugar and no calories, so therefore it must be good for them. And if they're on a calorie-controlled diet, that must be great. But actually it's having a big impact on their health, not just in the short term, but in the longer term too. So these studies have brought up a number of different points, which I thought I'd just relay to you. So first and foremost, and there are a lot of studies out there, it's not just these three that I'm talking about here, but there's lots and lots of studies that have shown that diet drinks do raise the risk of developing type 2 diabetes, and in some cases raising the risk more than if you drank the sugared version. Now, that's not for me to say that the sugared version is healthier, because it isn't. Too much sugar, as we know, is bad for the body for all sorts of reasons. But being educated that these diet drinks are a much healthier option is maybe not the case. Number two, women who drank one can of diet drink in some of these studies had a 33% increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And women who drank half a litre had a 66% increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And type 2 diabetes is a big problem in this country. It's estimated that there are around 4.6 million type 2 diabetics, but only 4 million know they've got it. So there's around 600,000 people in this country that have type 2 diabetes and have no idea that they have it. And they generally won't pick it up, it won't get picked up until either they have some symptoms. So, for example, they might be thirsty a lot, or they might be urinating a lot, which is the body's way of getting rid of extremely high levels of blood sugar. This happened to a friend of mine recently. He was driving down the road and his vision was blurred, only for a few seconds. And then it happened again and again and again. And he went to his doctors. And he had a blood sugar test, and they found that he had advanced type 2 diabetes. So it'd either be picked up when you get symptoms, and when you get the symptoms, generally, you're in quite a lot of trouble already, or it may get picked up on a random blood test where perhaps the doctors are doing one of your annual MOTs, your body MOTs, or they're testing for something else. So number three, women who drank diet drinks, too many D's there. Women who drank diet drinks, they drank twice as much as those who drank sugar sweetened drinks. This is partly because they thought that the drinks were healthier. Therefore, with zero calories and no sugar, they could drink more. But obviously, they were then drinking more of the chemicals. But also, these artificial sweeteners can be more addictive to the body, and they can often be more sweeter than regular sugar. And as I mentioned, the average diet drinker is drinking around three cans of these diet drinks a day. So some of the things that this does to the body as well, these diet drinks, they trick your metabolism into thinking it's going to get a hit of sugar. Now, when that happens, your body, your pancreas, if you're a non-diabetic, produces insulin to deal with this, what it thinks is going to be an increase in sugar. And insulin essentially is the fat storage hormone. So even though you're not consuming sugar, insulin will still cause your body to lay down more body fat and particularly more abdominal fat. These sweeteners, they confuse your metabolism, and actually they can slow your metabolism down, so actually you burn less calories in a day. They can actually make you crave carbohydrates and sugar. And I've noticed it. I've watched people drink their can of diet drink, and then they have a chocolate bar, or they have a packet of crisps, because the artificial sweeteners have created this situation where the body thinks it's going to get hit of sugar. Then obviously there is no sugar, and therefore it increases the cravings for these sugary carbs, and also starchy carbs like bread and pasta as well. And do bear in mind that these sweeteners are often maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of times sweeter than regular sugar. And what they can do is they can fool the taste buds in the tongue as well, and they can desensitize us to sugar itself. So these sweeteners aren't the healthy choice. You know, ideally switch from the sweet versions and the artificially sweetened versions to water. Just try drinking water. You know, it might not be something that you immediately attach onto or you immediately like, but it will actually be better for your long-term health. So the bottom line is, there is no free ride. If you are drinking these diet drinks, they are generally not a good substitute. They're not healthier than the sugary drinks, the sugary variations. Both are equally unhealthy, but in different ways. And these artificially sweetened drinks can increase your cravings, particularly for carbohydrates, and ironically, particularly for sugar. There are many, many studies that have suggested that these diet drinks, these artificially sweetened drinks, do contribute to weight gain and obesity. And there is pretty solid evidence now that these diet drinks are increasing the risk of type 2 diabetes. And they are incredibly addictive, potentially more addictive than sugar, which for those of you that are aware, sugar is incredibly addictive by itself. But it's suggested that these artificial sweeteners are even more addictive than sugar. So there's some interesting facts there about diet drinks. So don't be fooled into thinking that they are the healthier option than drinking sweetened drinks. As I mentioned, both are equally unhealthy, but in their different ways. And there is some interesting research out there at the moment. So please go away and do your own research. If you are heavily into sweetened fizzy drinks, or you do enjoy your diet, your artificially sweetened fizzy drinks, I do encourage you to please do your own research, because it might be contributing to weight gain if you have a weight issue, but more worryingly, it might be setting you up for type 2 diabetes as you get older. So, about to wrap the show up now. I hope you found the show interesting, and there's some facts in there that you can take away and you can apply it in your own life. A quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed is @HealthRadioShow. So please drop me a tweet between now and the next show, and I'll happily give you a shout out or announce any events that you've got coming up. You can contact me via my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. You can listen again to this show and all previous shows via my website. If you go to the media page, you can find all the previous shows there. You can go to iTunes and search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can subscribe for free to the show's podcast page. And you can also go to SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/ The Health Matters Radio Show, and you can download all previous shows there. I would like to thank Jill one more time for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you, Neil, for having me.
And just a quick reminder of Jill's website is www.allhealthmatters.co.uk. On my next show, I have Cam Winchester from Acupuncture in Eden, and Cam will be talking to us and enlightening us about acupuncture, what it is and what it can do for the body. And I'm looking out for guests in March, April and May. So if you'd like to come on the show, as Jill has done this morning, and talk about more about your business, then please find me via my website, drop me a line, and we'll have a chat from there. So until next Monday, I wish you a happy week, a healthy week, And I'm going to play you out with one more song from 1980. It is a classic from the late, great David Bowie, Ashes to Ashes. Until next time, have a great week.
It's true.
They got a message from the Action Man.
I'm happy, hope you're happy too. I've loved all of needed love, saw the details fall away. The shaking of nothing is killing, just pictures of Jeff girls and synthesis. And I ain't got no money and I ain't got no hands. But I'm hoping to kick with this planet is glowing. Ashes to ash and fuck to fuck it. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's high.